This is Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury, Web Radio. I'm Miguel Castro.
And I'm Ben Lubman. You're listening to Global Media News from the New Media Newsroom on OWWR, Old Westbury, Web Radio.
This week in Global Media News, we have media news from Brazil, Tanzania, Japan, the United Kingdom, Colombia, India, and the Middle East.
From Brazil.
Can Brazilian democracy survive the power of WhatsApp and social misinformation?
From Tanzania.
Why is Tanzania government so scared of social media?
From Japan.
What's new in the fall season of anime from Japan?
From Great Britain.
Why are some Brits worried that social media is changing our perceptions of self?
From Colombia.
Want something delivered in Bogota? Download Rappi, the Colombian delivery app.
From India.
What's the best way to keep up with the Bollywood news?
From the Middle East.
Guess which social media app is taking the Middle East and North Africa by storm? Did you guess Snapchat? All this and more on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio, streaming live from the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
The elections are over in Brazil, and controversial conservative candidate Jair Bolsonaro is now president. Some critics are concerned about the state of Brazilian politics. Brazilians love social media, and especially chat apps like WhatsApp. President Bolsonaro is a right-wing populist who was elected by voters who are very upset about the state of Brazilian government. Can Brazilian democracy withstand the passions of social media? Emily Cirella is in the studio to report on the state of Brazilian democracy in a world of social media misinformation and sensationalism. Emily, what are the most popular social media platforms in Brazil?
The online social media networks in Brazil include Okert. Okert was originally the most dominant social media in Brazil until Facebook took over. Social media is not just a way to communicate and post, but this has become a viral political battlefield. Brazil is South America's most influential country, a rising economic power, and one of the world's biggest democracies. This shows how much social media influences can not only affect Brazil, but all of South America, making good or bad things go publicly viral. The Listening Post states that the biggest thing interrupting the election is the phone. The people don't trust politicians, but they also don't trust their media. People rely on so much what is posted by social media. The man leading the polls in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, is one that knows how to manipulate the social media in his favor. Brazilians are not only just on social media, but they are completely involved in it. A study was done to prove more than half of social media users weekly have used it. 2 out of 3 people said yes. A problem Brazil has come to terms with is that there are social media accounts that are fake, such as Facebook's, that false advertise to negatively post about the elections. Media watches services are hired to watch and filter the news that is being posted before false gossip goes viral. Facebook has been able to take control. Jair Bolsonaro has had a crazy run during the past presidential election due to him being stabbed about 2 months ago and fake news going viral about him through social media. His opponent, Fernando Haddad, was one that was terrorized by social media and fake news, and a big majority of people believed that he did do it. An outbreak on social media's posts and the brawl went viral. Brazil believes that the world has turned into more malicious than good. Brazil has the fourth largest market in the world, and social media is growing rapidly in Brazil as well.
So do any of the Brazilian people use TV as their social media intake?
TV is still used, but only where there's Wi-Fi for social media. Well, no Wi-Fi for social media is less likely to be reached, so that's when they resort to TV.
Are there other people that react poorly to fake news besides the Brazilian government?
Fake news appeals to people's emotions, so if the content you're receiving is reinforcing your existing beliefs, it makes you feel confident that you're right, and you're more inclined to believe something than when it contests or challenges your beliefs.
Are there large numbers of Facebook or YouTube users?
The StatCounter, which calculates global statistics for places worldwide, state that 56% of users in Brazil are using Facebook. This shows that people of Brazil definitely use social media, which most people cannot use, but for a quick, easy access of news, whether it be true or not. For Global Media News, I'm Emily Cirella, passing it back to you, Ben.
Thanks, Emily. Brandon Johnson is here with social media news from Tanzania. The government of Tanzania is cracking down on social media. Brandon, why is the government of Tanzania trying to censor and regulate the internet and social media?
Last week, I was talking about Uganda, so I'm basically staying in the atmosphere of Africa, so it's very sad to even speak about situations like this because Tanzania is one of those countries, just like Uganda, has strict government laws and restrictions on how you can do things, how you can go about it certain ways, especially when it comes to social media. When it comes to a topic like this, it's like no other, like because, you know, when governments, they say they're a democracy, when truly it's almost like communism and dictatorship, right? that they can limit you to doing so much in this country. But as far as censoring and regulating, they want to do that because they don't want their country to look bad overruling the president's authority or making the country in a bad light. Because one time someone posted a picture and a video, this was back in Uganda, of, you know, destruction happening, and it made the country look really bad. And of course you have to use your freedom of speech because we're all entitled to that. So once they posted that, they didn't agree with that so much, and, you know, it made them really, you know, be disfavor of actually people having social media. So the reason for the censorship is because, you know, a lot of times people, you know, feel like they can do certain things, like post, like, you know, provocative pictures and stuff like that. And, you know, the president, President Mangufuli doesn't agree with stuff like that because he's a religious man, he's Catholic. So I feel like when it comes to any type of sexual orientation, he wants that to not be, you know, included in the country. So I think that's the most important reason why the government is censoring and regulating internet on social media, because they feel like if you can pay to use the social media, by all means, post what you want. But if you're not going to pay, don't complain, because, you know, this is how we want to rule our country. And if you're not in agreement of that, then that's good, because, you know, foreign markets nowadays, they could be spreading information to them, and I think they're fearful of that because they feel like citizens can go to other markets, put a negative light on this country. That's one of the reasons why Tanzania is in a bad space right now.
Considering Tanzania being biased towards males and females, why are they doing that? Why are they being biased?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, because I have something written down right here where it's a musician, right? A decorated musician in this country of Tanzania. His name is Diamond Platnumz, arrested for posting a picture with just kissing his girlfriend. I mean, I don't even know how bad, you know, that could be. Just getting arrested for that. And that's very biased, like you mentioned. And predominantly, Tanzania is cracking down on the gays out there. But the reason for the bias is because they're really money hungry. You know what I mean? I think that's what it is, because if you want to post content online, there's always a price to pay, right? They like to say in life. But social media is created for free. So you think, why would they do something like this? Something's wrong with the government, the funds. Maybe that's what the reason why they want to charge people. So it's just very difficult to really, you know, grasp that topic, Miguel, because they really want to crack down on gays, because there's a law out there, right? The Penal Code of 1945, Section 138, 154, 155, and 157, that states men's relationships have consequences by getting the maximum sentence of life in prison, right? According to the International Labor Organization.
Is there a bad relationship between Tanzania and the United Nations?
Oh, absolutely. They had to pull the ambassador from Tanzania. I mean, when you have to do something like that, I mean, that's a big deal, because Tanzania people are mistreated very, you know, badly. We got cops raiding homes just to find, you know, gay people. And it's becoming outrageous, man. I mean, they have a group that was created by Paul Makonda, the governor of Tanzania, who wants to use a task force to use apps like social media, such as Instagram, Facebook, to track down gay people. And I actually had a fact there. They had over 5,000 messages, and they caught over 100 individuals. So it's just really outrageous, like I said. And it's getting out of hand to the point where you can't be yourself in this country. I mean, that's why people are moving. There was one famous Instagram personality who moved out to United States because he couldn't take it no more, and he posted on Instagram, his official name is Nak Han Official, in solidarity with our Tanzanian LGBT community at this trying time. And even the president of the LGBT community said they're hiding. I mean, you can't even go out in the public without probably even dressing, you know, wrong, and you'll be arrested and persecuted, you know. So that's one of the big deals.
Understandable. Is there any specific, like, fees to post content online?
You're not going to believe this, man. I mean, the fee itself is very expensive, but it's so many different processes you have to go through with this, right? So just to apply for a license, just to post content on social medias, it costs 100,000 shillings, which is over, you know, $100. Then you got the initiation fee of 100,000 shillings again, and an annual fee of 900 US a year. How do you make up for that? I mean, this country, half of the people don't even make that, you know what I'm saying, a year. So that's just like the official pricing, that's according to the courtsafrica.com. I don't know why it's so expensive. See, us, we use social media to promote ourselves and just to network and, you know, try to make money off of it, you know, sometimes, but, you know, that's not the case. For Global Media News, I'm Brandon Johnson. Back to you, Ben.
Thanks, Brandon. There is always something new in anime. Let's talk about latest news from Japan.
Brendan Linford and my co-host Ben Lubman are on the anime beat for Global Media News this week. Brendan, what's new from Japan this fall?
Well, what's new from Japan is, well, probably one of my top favorite shows will have to be Tokyo Ghoul, Attack on Titan Season 3, and this new maid show that is, I would have to say, is one of like the funniest anime shows I've ever seen in my whole entire life. It absolutely hilarious. The hijinks this maid gets into is like absolutely funny.
So what about that show?
Oh, what about that show? Well, it stars a former self-defense officer and who quits her job as the self-defense force and decides to become a maid for a second grader, which she's absolutely obsessed over. Like, she's obsessed of the look of I would say a little girl, pretty much, like a lolicon she is. And she loves this girl unconditionally, will do anything for her.
And that gets into like the issue of like the whole lolicon thing in Japan.
Yes, the whole lolicon obsessed with little girls.
Should I watch the show though?
I think you should take a look at it. It's very interesting in how it approaches the comedic aspect and like the studio behind making it come true, Studio Doga Kubo, the studio behind it. They love making comedic animes, so I think you will actually find it very interesting.
Nice. I got a suggestion for you. Have you seen Goblin Slayer?
Oh my gosh, Goblin Slayer. Yes, I have seen Goblin Slayer. I have to say, it's actually one of my top favorite shows right now.
It's so good. It's like usually for shows like it, the world seems to be kind of split. Like, this show has a way of dividing people, not by area, but by, like, morals.
Mm-hmm.
The edgy killing sequences are all run-of-the-mill for an anime like this, but for an anime this popular and hyped up to have, like, a full-on rape scene...
Oh, definitely.
A lot of people from all over the world, like, came together to hate on it.
Yeah.
Actually, the first episode of Goblin Slayer has a group of low-level adventurers go out to kill some goblins in a cave. Their adventure goes horribly wrong as the lone male of the group is killed, one of the women is raped, and another member of the group is severely wounded and nearly raped, with the only one who gets away being the healer who runs into the legendary Goblin Slayer, a well-known high-level adventurer whose sole mission in life is to kill all goblins. It should be noted that the goblins in this series are essentially a parasitic species requiring humans for spawning the next generation of goblins, all of whom are male, leading to the aforementioned requirement and the motivation to kidnap female humans. Rape female humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll allow genocide of a parasitic rapist species. Thank you very much. There was from what I saw, there was an especially strong backlash in Japan and Europe since, actually, interestingly, Crunchyroll didn't give an appropriate rating or warning to the show when it was initially added to their platform.
Really? They didn't?
Yeah, no, they didn't say anything, and they put out a statement on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so there was,
I'm surprised.
It was a mess. You got any other shows for me?
Well, have you seen, like, Attack on Titan?
I have seen season one.
Man, you gotta see season two and three. What's going on?
Sell me on it.
Well, like, now they made season three. I've been waiting for a year. They finally made it. Now we're getting more development of what's going on behind the walls of Wall Mario, Wall Rose, and I forget the other wall's name, but now we're getting more to, like, what's going on with, like, who's making the Titans. For, like, Titans are not born Titans. They are really humans.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler. I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry, audience who's watching Attack on Titan who does not know that. But they are humans that are made to be Titans. And the only way for them to become Titan shifters, another spoiler alert, is that they have to eat a Titan shifter. And now we're becoming much more in depth into the story, and we're finally knowing what's beyond the walls of the world of Attack on Titan.
Exciting.
So in regards to the Japanese audience, what do you think the top five fall animes that they'd be interested in are?
Well,
I got one last one.
Bengo.
at long last, I've been gearing up for this one for 2 years now. A long last, David Productions' JoJo's Bizarre Adventure gets an anime adaptation to the fifth part of the long-running manga of the same name. This part is called Vento Oreo, or Golden Wind. It focuses on a delinquent named Giorno, living in Italy, who uses the physical manifestation of his fighting spirit, called a stand, to get by. The manga's creator, Hirohiko Araki, performed extensive research in order to faithfully portray the city and studied how the city was built in depth, geography, and history. And I quote, "Then when I had exhausted my research, I traveled to find the things that weren't in the research. As a result, the Rome I drew captured the real sights of the city, from the buildings to the traffic signals and more." End quote. This is the first time in JoJo history that a subtitled version and a dubbed version is actually going to come out in Italian.
Oh, Italian?
Which is actually really cool, yeah. There's going to be a dub and a sub of JoJo in Italian because it takes place in Italy. I'm a gigantic fan of this series, so definitely worth the 2-year wait for part 5.
I'll definitely give it another look.
Hell yeah.
And back to your question, Miguel, of the top 5 fall anime shows that Japan is watching this year, I would have to say, like Ben, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Goblin Slayer, which got like a lot of controversy first coming out. Fairy Tail is now in its final season. I'm getting tired of that show. Sorry. Tokyo Ghoul and Attack on Titan. And also this new show, I think me and Ben were talking about it like I think a week ago about a Bunny Girl, I guess.
Yeah, Bunny Girl Senpai.
Yeah, I started watching it.
Yeah, didn't have time to watch it.
It's pretty good.
I've heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, and their taste is very different from ours. As Japan does, I looked on a YouTube video and they said Japan is not really into Goblin Slayer like the U.S. is. Oh. They're more into like that new mech show, Battling Monsters. Is it SS?
Oh yeah. It's like four S's and then a word. I forget what it's called. But
They're interested in that. They criticize our tastes.
Japan loves their mechs.
Yes, they do.
What anime shows are you watching this fall?
Definitely. I definitely recommend Zombieland Saga as a last note. Didn't mention it today, but Zombieland Saga has some great animation. Okay. And so for Global Muni News, I'm Ben Lubman.
And Brendan LaFord.
Then across the board like the pen and the sword, welcome back to Global Media News on OWWR, Old Westbury Web Radio. Logan Mitchell is here with media news from the UK. Logan, you found a news item about social media and our self-worth. What is the story, and why are some Brits concerned that social media can affect our sense of self-worth?
Meghan Markle was going on tour with her prince and discussing how social media can affect our youth and even the adults across the world who are using social media. So mental health advocates in New Zealand hosted an event that the Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle, spoke at while on tour with her husband, Prince Harry of England. In 2017, in the UK alone, the total number of social media users had reached over 39 million users, with estimates going up to 42 million users.
Wow.
With so many social media users in the UK, and with Markle being an influential role model internationally, her words and personal accounts of social media's influence on her own life were taken very seriously by many. According to an independent article, Meghan Markle visited a cafe in Wellington where she talked to staff and volunteers from a number of initiatives, including Live for Tomorrow, an organization focused on reaching youth with messages of hope and positive change. While many of the United Kingdom's youth uses social media as a form of entertainment, there are other not-so-innocent consequences that come with it. Markle, who spoke on behalf of celebrities on a global scale, discusses the issue of using filters, along with the false reality that people show on their social media pages. It is no longer okay to assume that somebody actually looks like they do on their Instagram or Facebook page. In an article written by Jane Wakefield on BBC, she quotes a man named Dr. Chatterjee, who speaks about social media's link to childhood depression. The article also discusses a study done by the RSPH, which suggested Snapchat and Instagram were the most likely to inspire feelings of inadequacy and anxiety. YouTube had the most positive influence. Many children in the UK also claimed that being on Facebook made them more likely to be cyberbullied. Many children, teens, and even adults across the world, and in the UK specifically, are hiding behind filters and other editing tools to erase any forms of imperfection or even to eliminate actual aspects of themselves to appeal to their followers' perception of perfection. For example, people blur out, you know, acne, they crop out their curves, they Photoshop in bigger breasts, bigger hips, you know, the whole Kim Kardashian thing. The Duchess says, your judgment of yourself, of your sense of self-worth becomes really skewed when it's all based on likes. If the United Kingdom's youth is so invested in how they appear on social media and don't invest in ways to limit the use of it, it seems as though they will eventually lack the skills to make themselves better in real life. Our world's youngest generations are growing up in a false reality, where the amount of likes a person gets on a post directly conveys their validity and sense of self-worth.
Huh, so she's taking a stand on social media?
Yeah, I mean, as such an influential character across, you know, the globe, from America to the UK and in between, she just, you know, wanted to speak out from her own personal experience of what social media did to her own life. And it also, in some of the articles, it discussed how she took a break from social media. And once she did that, she found herself much happier and much, you know, less worried about what other people thought of her.
Oh, nice. Good old Megan. Fun fact, I'm actually, or was related to her.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean was?
Her ex-husband, Trevor Engelson, is my direct cousin.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he met her right after she stopped her job on Deal or No Deal. She was one of the girls.
That's very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Yeah,
I didn't even know she was previously married.
Yeah, no. I remember Rosh Hashanah. She was at my uncle's house, and she was very nice. She was really cool, so it's good to know that she hasn't changed.
From Global Media News, I'm Logan Mitchell. Back to you.
Thanks, Logan. Let's jump across the Atlantic from Great Britain to Latin America. Miguel Castro is my co-host this week, and he's delivering us a report from Colombia. Miguel, are you going to use Rappi to deliver us this report from Colombia? And what does Rappi bring to Colombians who use this app on their phones?
Honestly, to keep things a little bit simple, for those of you guys who don't know what Rappi is, it's basically the South American version of Uber Eats. You want to get food, you're as lazy as I am after all the hard work you do. You just want it done to you. Maybe you don't want pizza, maybe you want Chipotle. Personally, my favorite. Have it brung to you. Rappi is not just Colombian in the sense that it was developed by three young entrepreneurs of our ages, college group, but right now it's actually accessible to multiple different South American countries, including Argentina, Chile, Colombia, and Uruguay. It's been interesting as there's been a lot of investment on it, and it's actually been featured on a couple of different Forbes websites as an up and rising, not just app, but service. But recently there's been a lot of speculation on to whether it can be profitable due to the changes that they've been making. A lot of the drivers, or corredores, which is what they were called in Spanish, they're the ones who are in charge of getting the food over. They're making as little as $1 over every single delivery.
Really?
Which, although, of course, it's different money-wise in Colombia, mm-hmm. So pesos and dollars can get you a lot more, but it's still very low. The extent that it's very interesting due to right now a lot of people are quitting, and that's not helping with the profitability issues, because first off, the low costs. Second off, there's used to be an overall 3,800 peso minimum. Now they discounted it to 1,800 pesos, which in the sense is decreasing the profit both for the company. It's making more labor for less money. So they're basically focusing on pennies. It's not going to do anything. The only thing it's going to do is you're risking getting a small margin of profit that doesn't even matter for the sake of your workers. And not only is that not really good profitability in business sense, but that's just using your workers and not valuing them as people. And it's just completely horrible.
Sure.
But other than my opinion, right now, there are a lot of investors that are worried due to the fact that it's not coming to par with the profitability. The growth hasn't been showing as much. Even though it's been really accessible, the low pay has been wearing away at the corredores. They've been saying that back in the day, they could make a decent amount of money in 10 trips. They'd do 10 trips a day, and they'd be set on their days of work. And now they have to do 15 to 18 trips just to make up, to be equal on that, those wages for the day, which is almost double. And that's unacceptable, which is very easily, you can perceive why someone would be very disappointed or someone would be very willing to leave if the standards of change, standards of payment and standards of living kind of get changed.
For sure.
With that, they're trying to see what could possibly be a better deal. They have a partnership with a shipping company and a packaging company, which helps them with their specific branding in Colombia or in South America. If you see, they're really good on their identification. So if you see someone on an orange scooter or has an orange box with something in it, it's probably going to be one of them on Rappi getting someone else food. So they're good in being recognized, but in terms of actually making it, a lot of investors are worried. Personally, I'm worried for the sake of the workers, because even though the company might not be profitable and the owner's still up there, still has control of everything, in my opinion, it's the workers that are going to get the brunt of everything, because the expense of the workers is taken much quicker than the expense of the owners. Mm-hmm. That goes true for quite a lot of things. But yeah, well, what are you interested in about Rappi? I can answer any questions you have.
Well, what do you think is the future of Rappi?
I think the future of Rappi is finding out a proper business model. Mm. Right now, they have a delivery fee, which they charge, which is fairly high. It's like, imagine our perspective would be like adding $5 or $10 extra dollars to our order. If I want a burrito, it's $10. I'm not sure if I want to pay 20-something plus the tip. Mm. So that comes out to 2.5 or just double your price normally, which I understand if you're lazy or if you're having a nice day of just resting, but the extent of the pricing is very high and all of it's going to the company. And now you might say, well, they're making profitability issues, that's not going to really help them if they lower their costs. Well, it's not, but if you lower the delivery fee and maybe you lengthen the amount that the drivers get tipped, you could not only have your drivers be happier, but by overall lowering it, you might get more business. Of course, I'm not a businessman. I have my own business, but this is way, way too upscale. It's just a fact of, I honestly don't see this growing. I think that to expand, you'd probably have to bring this into other markets, not just South America. You'd have to transfer to Europe or something, but as of South America, it's not really doing well in Chile, not doing well in Argentina. It's pretty prominent in Colombia, but even in Colombia, why do you need a driver in just certain parts of the desert where Medellin, of course, you're going to have people there. It's all populated. I wouldn't have chosen some of the countries they chose. Argentina, definitely populated, definitely a good chance to make profit there. But just some deserted parts are just...
Yeah, just real quick, Miguel, because I'm very interested in your topic as well. What's your opinion like on self-paid services? And don't you feel like it's due to the economics why, you know, Rappi, that app, is probably not paying the people what they're supposed to be paid?
I think that there's both a mix of business and culture. So right now, for example, let's say you want food. Let's say you're thinking about getting that. You just don't want to get up. You're with your girl. You're just watching movies. You don't really want to ruin the vibe. You don't want to have to like get dressed, go all the way out there. That's why Rappi's there, and that's a good thing. But in terms of, they're making themselves too focused on trying to make profit, and they're losing their audience by marking up these prices to standards that aren't really payable, both for the wage earners, the workers, and for whoever pays. It's just basically canceling them both out and saying, yeah, we want a lot of money, but they don't care if it comes to the expense of either their workers or the audience. In terms of business in general, I think that this is the service that should be paid. It shouldn't be paid as expensive as it is, just like any other service. And I don't know, in general, I think services such as not just food delivery, but anything artistic, music, photos, anything, if you have a skill set or if you have something that someone wants, whether it's food, whether it's photos, whether it's music and talent, you deserve to be paid for it. And shouldn't If you're going to bring people food, why do you have to get the, why do you have to just slack off with $1, you know?
Mm-hmm. Last question, and then we'll, I guess, wrap things up. How would you, Miguel, how would you fix Rappi?
How would I fix Rappi? First off, I'd start off by getting to the root of the problem. Everyone, the three workers that made it, of course, are millennials like us, and it's a really interesting take on it, but I don't think their mindset is in the right way. They're expanding too fast. They're going to places that aren't specifically noted well. They're not properly prioritizing the workers. And I don't know about you, but if I've ever been in a job and management turns down, I didn't want to say something else, I don't want to work there anymore. If I don't, if there's not such thing as specifically bad workers, there can be, but in my opinion, it's more bad management that drives people out.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that's rough, but if a manager says, sticks it through, gives you motivation, and maybe makes up for it, brings you a pizza, or just is as kind as possible, I think that people can power through it. I think that Rappi workers would be more understanding and say, hey, no, business is weird and not as profitable, but if you're giving us a boost, like, I know that Uber gives little promos like, hey, if you do these many rides, you get this bonus. That's incentive. That's not just incentive, but it's also kind of rewarding to the driver. You want to make the workers feel appreciated so they do their job better and they do more. You earn profits through incentives and motivation. You don't earn them through forced means and limits. From Global Human News, I'm Miguel Castro. Back to you, Ben.
Thanks, Miguel. Do you love Bollywood? Do you want to start singing and dancing spontaneously in the middle of a movie? Bollywood is big movie business, a global movie industry that delivers entertainment to viewers all over the world, not just in South Asia. What is the best way to keep up with the latest Bollywood news from the studios of Mumbai?
Today, we have Jennifer Zadana here talking about Bollywood. Why don't we have her start it off? Jennifer?
I believe that it's important to know about Bollywood sources when researching Bollywood because the source has to be trustworthy on the news that someone looks up. If it's not accurate or updated, people are less likely to check the site. Typically, the best Bollywood media sources include articles about celebrities and the film industry as a whole.
In terms of Bollywood, what got you into it? How do you connect with it?
Well, I myself, I'm Indian, so I watch a lot of Bollywood films and I keep up with actresses and actors. So I tend to check their social media platforms or I go and see the latest film that's out, and I think it's interesting to see them in action and on the film or in real life as well.
Understandable. Well, why is it important to you to know, for people to know Bollywood sources while researching it?
I think it's important because you need to know what's credible and you need to know what's accurate. So based on the facts that are put online and to formulate your own thoughts, I feel like the sources should be accurate.
Completely. Verification is very needed, especially with this new media of people calling each other out and saying it's fake news. You want to see what the truth is.
Yeah, of course.
Which sources do you look into in the media and why?
So there's one source that's titled Times of India. So if you were to search Bollywood news, you'll find accurate and trustworthy sources. A recent article that I read in the Times of India showed celebrities sending their wishes for Diwali, which is the Festival of Lights. And through social media, a celebrity named Karan Johar, who has his own talk show, had tweeted, "Happy Diwali to all of you. Love and light for life. Stay as positive as you can this year. Please wish your families from my family and I." He also included a picture of a diya, which is a traditional Indian candle. And this tweet can be viewed by anyone in the world, so it's a great way to spread cultural aspects of this joyous holiday. Another source is called Santa Vanta, which is known for its latest celebrity gossip in Bollywood. And it is constantly being updated with news and daily whereabouts of famous actors. And this site in particular shows reviews of films as well, which I myself have checked before watching a film because I feel like I value their opinion. And most of the time, they're pretty right and accurate on their reviews of the film. And then lastly, another source that I check, it's called Miss Malini, which is more of a blog style. And I think that intrigues readers because it feels like someone is speaking to you. And the site is easy to navigate and the headlines stand out to the reader, which makes you want to click on it. And in a recent article, the headline was, "Guests cheer as Ranveer Singh and Deepika Padukone wedding concludes." I feel like viewers of this site, including myself, are interested in celebrity romances because you see them on the screen and then you see them off the screen. So I feel like everyone has like a different perspective of them in real life. And I feel like people love to see visuals and videos and pictures, and often blogs like this embed tweets or photos from Instagram, which shows the engagement as well. And in the last line of this article, it states, they are yet to give us a glimpse of the bride and groom, but until then, this will have to do. So I feel like they want you leaving more, and they want you to read more, keep updated with the next article that they're going to post.
How has social media attributed to Bollywood media sources and their credibility?
Social media has played a huge role within articles and the sources. A majority of celebrities on social media engage with their fan base through these platforms, such as Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And many authors of these articles embed photos or direct tweets that celebrities have typed, which makes the source more credible. And I feel like those are more of direct sources, which can link back to their pages, and you can view their page as a whole or see what they did last week or see what they did the month before. And I feel like that's interesting to see, so you can keep up and basically see their life through pictures or videos. And I feel like that's very interesting for their fan base to see as well. For Global Media News, I'm Jennifer Sedana. Back to you, Miguel.
Thanks, Jennifer. Let's talk about the media of the Middle East. Samantha Capobianco has a report about social media in the Middle East and North Africa. Snapchat is trying to take over the social media market in the region called MENA. MENA is an acronym for the Middle East and North Africa. Samantha, can you start off by just telling us what some of the nations are that we're talking about using the term MENA?
Yes. Yeah, so as you said, the MENA stands for Middle East and North Africa, and it's basically stretching from Morocco to Iran, and the population of that region is about 381 million people. And in that region, Snapchat is very popular, and pretty much everyone knows what Snapchat is, but if you don't, it's an app which you can send and receive short videos or pictures for a set amount of time, and then they disappear. You can also like create stories and then save them for memories. You can use filters, draw on things, and add whatever text you want, and it's a great way to share a glimpse into your everyday life with your friends because it allows you to share what's happening exactly in that moment. So Hussein Frisia is Snapchat's general manager. He's in charge of growing their business in the MENA region. And the Middle East and Northern Africa is in the top three regions of global growth in the app. And the launch of Snapchat, there has been the most successful one yet. They said that this is due to their strategies of using the Discover page. And the Discover page on Snapchat is the most popular feature and it's used in a different way than the majority of the world there. The Discover page is a feature where it shows your Snapchat users and stories that are similar to the ones you view the most to interest you in following new people and new brands and ideas. And in the MENA region, they focus on finding credible news sources and businesses to use the Discover page for their advertisements with the creativity of Snapchat. And according to Claudine Coletti, a writer for Forbes Middle East, Snapchat does not consider themselves a social media app, as pretty much everyone else does, but rather a visual communication platform where the camera takes a key role. And regardless of the label the app has, it's managed to take control of an entire generation, and 90% of Snapchat ads on the Discover page have been booked directly by companies themselves because of the rapid success of the growth of the app.
How often do you use Snapchat, and how do you see it?
I use Snapchat pretty often, pretty much every day, and like, you know, like Snapchat streaks and that kind of stuff. So keep that up, and yeah, I use it as like one of my main forms of communication because of that. Like, it shows you exactly what's happening when you're doing it.
So for them specifically, why has it been such a successful launch for them?
So Hussein Frisia, the general manager, thinks the biggest reason it's so successful is because they're providing more tools to enable creatives and publishers to create and understand the audiences on Snapchat, and they allow them to monetize and have a commercially viable capability on the platform. And this encourages both businesses and users to be more creative as well and explore the app and all of its features and like get people excited about it. For Global Media News, I'm Samantha Cavabianco. Back to you, Miguel.
Thanks, Samantha. That's all for this week. Thanks to Benjamin Lubman for hosting with me this week. our engineer Brandon Johnson, our producer Kristen Brave.
Today we heard reports from Samantha Capobianco, Miguel Castro, Emily Sorella, Brandon Johnson, Brandon Litford and me, Logan Mitchell, and Jennifer Sedana.
Global Media News is brought to you by OWWR, Old Westbury, Web Radio, and the Media and Communications Department here at the State University of New York College at Old Westbury.
For more media news and resources, check out our latest posts on globalmedianews.org, where you can listen to all of our webcasts and even subscribe to our podcast feed.
Follow us on Twitter at OWWRGMN. Use our Twitter feed to keep up with the latest news for aspiring journalists and media professionals. That's OWWRGMN.